That's Bill Jennings on guitar and Jack McDuff on organ with Blues Jams. It's from their collaborative 1959 album, Enough Said. Wendell Marshall on bass and Bill Elliott on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And today, a program I hope will provoke some thought in our heads about what's going on at this time in our lives, in the throes of a media-induced frenzy about the 2016 presidential race. It's so hard not to get caught up in the bizarreness of it all. But rather than join the madness, I think this election cycle should cause us to overhaul our thinking about the political process, about our political orientation and what we claim to be our respective ideologies, and about the nature of our relationship with this so-called system. We really need to kind of get into that. I'll tell you flatly, I am so underwhelmed by it all, and yet I am so apprehensive, I'm so tense about it, not about the election itself, but about the state of affairs with the rest of us. And the state of affairs is that we seem to be out of sorts. We seem to be caught unawares about what's going on here. What is it that we are supposed to be doing and thinking? And it seems to me that all of this is going on. It's almost like a surreal experience. You have a frenetic and frenzied coverage of an election with, it seems for the most part, all the wrong people, the wrong parties, the wrong temperament, the wrong visions. But it's the kind of Americana in a twisted way. It couldn't be more American. It's a bizarre spectacle. And a compliant media are trying to tell us that what we are witnessing is our version of this vibrant idea of democracy. You know, we get all excited about it. Yeah. But there, you know, we've seen quite a few low blows here, and there are some appalling things and appalling conduct and whatnot. But that is what is so American about it. We Americans have a very different brand of citizenship and citizen involvement and democratic expression and all of that kind of nonsense. And the propaganda machine is telling us that this is to be expected. And this is what makes politics so exciting. But we know that there's nothing here, really, that pertains to the aggregate good. And if anything, this election cycle is proving to us how absolutely bankrupt this process is, this whole thing is. That is, on one level, what we ought to come to terms with. What we are witnessing and how it squares against the idealistic definitions of democracy. Is this what it's supposed to be? Are we really supposed to be enthralled about this? Are we really supposed to be very, very thrilled about the idea that we are in the middle of a democratic process? We know that's just a farce. It's just so sad. You look at the people, you look at what they represent, you look at the parties, you look at the apparatus. The whole thing about it is about money. And in a way, a direct expression of contempt. I can't find any other word more suitable than contempt. This is a contemptuous expression of the both the process, the system, if you will, the system's views of just what people should put up with and tolerate. That's on one level. What really bothers me and has been bothering me, I've been talking about it, is that we seem, those of us who profess to have a better understanding, or perhaps a more sophisticated understanding, and I'm not trying to be, you know, snotty here, but our community supposedly is a community of people who have a, or tend to have a better grip on things. But even here, I'm finding more and more a kind of capitulation that I didn't expect. A resigned notion of, well, it's going to happen and, you know, we'll get over it and we'll go on. We don't have, in my view, we don't have a counterpoint. We don't have a credible response to the nonsense. We don't have an apparatus that could defend us as a community. We don't even have a working prototype of a kind of uniform idea of how we as a group, the main points of our ideological concerns. And therefore, we don't have any ambassadors really to speak of. We don't have an apparatus to compel the so-called system to respond. We have nothing. We are completely defenseless in this election cycle. We have nothing happening. Yes, you could say, well, you know, that really just writes off. I just wrote off the Green Party. I just wrote off Bernie Sanders. Or I just wrote off independent candidates who really have something to say. But no, that wouldn't be true. I'm not writing them off at all. Individually, yes. We can see there's a one thing happening over here and another thing happening over there. But you know what I'm talking about. We have no systems. We have no credible systems of response because this community, the progressive community, has not yet organized itself. And it is behaving in a very disturbing way, as if to suggest it has no reason to want to organize at all. We're beyond it. We are beyond the need to organize. Because we see we're so cerebral, we're such brainy people, we're so deep that we're beyond it. There's a certain kind of sentiment that you pick up. the groups who are most under assault, and historically they remain the same, communities of color, for the most part, are in almost total disarray. There's nothing really that represents a cohesive structure, let alone an amalgamation of cohesive structures. We're seeing the beginnings, perhaps, people could say, of a movement here and a movement there. But let us not be under any illusion that in this election cycle we have something going. We have nothing going. That's the plain truth of it. We have nothing going. So I think as this farce, this carnival, this horrific spectacle that people choose to call politics unfolds before our very eyes toward the inevitable that come November, somebody will be the new president of the United States, and that somebody would be embodying and carrying out the systems, the standing orders of the power elite. We should by now, at least if we're honest enough, we should say, you know, we ought to do some heavy auditing here, and we ought to pause, and we ought to think very, very clearly. We ought to have absolute clarity about where we are. And it's not a good place. We're not in a good place. Now, I'll tell you what my personal attitude has been. I shared with you that almost 20 years ago, I was in a voting booth about to cast my vote as a very dedicated voter and active citizen. When it occurred to me, it was a revelation right there in the voting booth. I was one of the most conscientious voters you could ever have found. I would arrive at a voting booth, voting place, much earlier than the people who had to set it up. I was so serious about this thing called voting. And there in the voting booth, massive insult to my intelligence. I was expected to vote either yes or no on a multi-billion dollar referendum for some project of the city, described in exactly 5 or 6 lines. I was supposed to vote for a judge who, well, because they're not allowed to even campaign, who I had no idea about. So I was reduced as an allegedly intelligent citizen casting a vote and participating in the electoral process. I was reduced by the system to making a decision on which person to elect, on how the name resonated with me. And I said, okay, well, guess what? We're going to end this business today. At that time, you had the old-fashioned, you know, the hangman's kind of execution chamber where you pull that lever almost like you would when you're pulling the lever to have the body descend and your neck is cracked and broken. And it was quite symbolic, actually, because I remembered hearing the sound of that lever as I pulled it to register that I was there, but I did not vote for a damn thing. Because, frankly, I was insulted. And I vowed until there is a compelling reason for me to vote, I will no longer participate in the process. I haven't found a compelling reason since that time until now. I keep my options open, hoping there would be something there to vote for. It didn't happen, even with Barack Obama, because he showed very early where his loyalties stood, and people just refused to get the message. He actually was insulting the community, and the community internalized it and accepted it, and in their own minds did a little kind of trick on themselves to say that they were participating in a historic moment, and the historic moment had to do not with a change in policy, not with a change in direction, not even in a change with respect to an administration's position and regard for the specific needs of these constituencies that are called upon to elect this president, but purely on the basis of the specious notion, well, you have a black man in the White House, and that is enough to cast your vote and throw away your vote on the basis of a hope. We were sold hope, and we bought it. We didn't care to think. We didn't want to ask questions. We didn't even tolerate an even-handed assessment of what it is we were getting into. It was simply the right thing to do. The political thing to do was to respond on the basis of the historicity of the moment having to do with a black man in the White House. And that simplistic analysis was what kept Barack Obama in office for 2 terms. And I find my friends who found reason to be highly critical of me, I find them now still married to the notion that they made the right choice. But I made the choice to opt out. I'm not going to be part of this. I'm not going to insult my own intelligence, but more importantly, I am not going to insult the integrity of the sacrifices people made in order that we could get this far. I cannot in good conscience believe that I could justify support for a person who clearly showed loyalty to the system first, the same system that deprived those who went before us of their rights, that conducted genocidal campaigns in modern form of policies that imprisoned people in this country of color at record rates, unemployment at record rates, poor housing, inadequate health care, substandard schools. And I'm talking now 2016. The very first petition before Congress, after the slaves were supposedly emancipated, had to do with education. That's how serious this thing was. So when you're telling me in 2016 that I should get all excited about the fact that you, Mr. Sanders, you want to have free tuition for everybody. Well, you see, my history and my understanding of history tells me this is nothing to get all excited about. It is not about whether you should have free education or whether you shouldn't have free education. It is about this rotten system giving a mere pittance of a concession because they can afford to do that with the understanding they have the rest of you all the time. They've got you. So they'll give you free education here, but they lock up almost the entire community. and you're supposed to be okay with that. Now, excuse me. This brings me to the whole point of this, why I'm so offended about this whole process. And that is because we literally are losing our minds. We're joining this exercise of voluntary amnesia. You can't get excited about anything here. What you should be excited about, in the sense of really being very angry, is how long are we going to go around the same circles? And we should decide that this election cycle is the cycle in which we bring this to a halt. We stop it. We stop the insults. We stop the cycle of abuse. We stop the fantastic exercise that we indulge in of creating a reality that simply isn't. If people in this, you know, I talk to friends and they're telling me the issue is this and the issue is that and the issue is the other. And I say, don't you understand? By now we ought to have an entirely different point of reference about how we talk about politics. I don't want to hear about your issues. I want to hear about your systemic response. I want to hear a systemic analysis. When you start talking about issues, you already are off the mark, because the issues are designed to dissipate concentration, to dissipate and fractionate the awesome reality here. No, the system as a system has totally failed. And we need systemic analysis and systemic responses. I don't want to hear, I'm not supposed to be getting all frenzied about the idea that somebody should post the notion and as a public consideration that, oh, I favor a $15 an hour wage minimum. Why should that excite me? If we looked at it, the question is, why has it taken so long to arrive at a point that should have been clear to you more than 20 years ago? Why is this supposed to excite me that Bernie Sanders wants 15, but Hillary Clinton only wanted 12? And therefore, if I go on the basis of the minimum wage, I now have a point at which I could compare Hillary's position with Bernie Sanders' position. But in fact, they're both out of sync with my personal reference to history. My historical reference, which comes into play, now tells me that they're both out of date. They're both out of whack and not nearly aggressive enough. Don't tell me in 2016 that this is something that should excite me about you. No, I'm not excited. It's not a big deal to me. Don't tell me that an issue for me should be about women's rights. That is not something that has ever been an issue for me. My historical point of reference tells me that issue was made very clear since the 1600s for me. and people who come from my neck of the woods. We've been dealing with this since the 1600s. You're just waking up to it in 2016. Good for you. So you can't possibly tell me in 2016 that women's rights issues should now be of great concern to me. They were of concern to us, my community, since the 1600s, technically since the 1500s. You see? Don't tell me about all of a sudden, the issue for me and the issue on which I should base the performance of the system has to do with climate change. I agree. The climate is in terrible shape. But we've been telling you this for hundreds of years. I'm historically way ahead of you on this one. Native Americans have been ahead of the entire planet on this question of environmental abuse. They were leading the way until their voices were moved aside so that white supremacist control could take charge of that issue and that fight also. You see, if you don't have a historical reference, you'll get excited about these things. And you get drawn into a fight that isn't even yours. Very little that is going on in the political mix actually is my fight. Very little has anything to do with me and my community's interests, has any reference at all with respect to my historical wrongs that have been done, had nothing to do with that. They're not ready to discuss political solutions at that level. So why am I to indulge in a game of self-deceit by pretending that your issues are my issues? No. If there's anything here that would attract my interest, it would be the degree to which you recognize my issues as your issues. But that's not happening. Don't give me ceremonial attention and tell me suddenly you realize that Black Lives Matter. Where have you been for 5 centuries? Don't tell me about that. I'm not excited about your coming to terms with this revelation. It has taken you 5 centuries to just catch up with the basics of history. So you are not equipped to deal with my interests, nor are you interested in dealing with my interests. So that brings us to the second point I want to make. How do we, as a community, well, people will say, you're being kind of hard here. Yes, I am. Because the time has come to stop the business of feeling, uncomfortable about pressing the point. I'm assuming that we're talking to politically mature, grown-up people who can appreciate reality for what it is. This is not about placating anybody, and it's not about insulting anybody. It is just saying, these are the objective situations. Let's deal with them as they are. And my take on my own reality is as valid as anybody else's out there. And I don't have to excuse it or explain it. The African American community to me is in such horrible shape because of this same thing. You know what your reality is, and yet you allow another reality to be forced upon you, and to you adopt that as if it is the thing that is real to you. It isn't. It isn't real to you. When you see the mothers, the black mothers of murdered children, murdered by police officers, their husbands shot down, when you see people like that disgracing the honor and integrity of the names of those who were close to them for the sake of saying, well, I endorse Hillary Clinton. You know, you have to have lost your mind. There's no other way to explain that. There's no other way to explain the complexity and the enormity of the self-deprecation of that act. You have to take a couple of months to unravel that. And that over their bodies, the reward is a photograph being invited to a cocktail party where you hobnob with the hobnobbables. And gone from your mind is a history of struggle. Gone from your mind are the deaths by the thousands of people who simply were trying to affirm their right to exist. This is what we have to deal with. You know, the assumption is all around, black, white, polka dot, the assumption is that everybody's sane, that our brains are in fine working order, that we operate from a point of logic, that we have a handle on this reality that we're living, and we don't. There is no way, if you understood your history with respect to the system, there is no way you can approach this election or any election from the standard point of view. You just can't. Nobody's going to define for me what my issue is. Nobody's going to tell me what they can do for me. You haven't even asked. You haven't even exhibited an understanding of the issue, nor a willingness to even understand it. They can't tell me what you're going to do for me. I will stand up and fight for you. I don't want you standing up and fighting for me. I want you to do as I need you to do. Now, can we get that done? I don't want to hear what your positions are on anything. I want to know what you have done to ascertain the positions within my community. Don't tell me what you're going to do. I know you are incapable of doing anything really substantive to elevate. You have no interest. It is counterintuitive for you to come from that perspective. You will have no interest in promoting my community and people who are part of my community. And I'm not talking just racially here. You will have no interest in promoting peace. You will have no interest in promoting justice. You will have no interest in taking on the Justice Department and the police departments. Didn't I tell you that? Didn't we see that with the black president? Loyalty is to the system first. Now, until you can demonstrate to some credible degree that you're brave enough, savvy enough, dedicated enough to part ways significantly with the system, then we have something to talk about. Until then, I am not part of the charade. I'm out. As the saying said, as Yogi Berra used to say, include me out. So this is a time that the communities need to grapple with the idea that they have been refusing to deal with the political system politically. They are content simply to go along, offer no resistance, and by doing so, they essentially hand the system a victory because there is no counterpoint to what the intended policies will be. There's nothing there. You see it. The NAACP and the Urban League and Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and all of these people have absolutely no huge difference with the Democratic Party. They have no particular point of contention with Hillary Clinton. Even Barack Obama, who she sliced and diced up when she was trying to get the White House away from him, even he is there now, going to bat for Sister Hill, who has made very clear her intentions. Her husband made the intentions very clear back in 1994. These people aren't kidding. They're not playing around. So what is our response? And why is it that we continually have no response? And yet we get angry when the system does inevitably what it intends to do. We get out there, we make noise for a good 15 minutes, and predictably, we will all at some point disappear. We will not reinvest that energy in organizing in our communities. We think that's somebody else's job. We will not organize systems of resistance. We will not do it. We will not do the work because it's tedious. We will not put the energy at all out. We're tired. We're tired. Besides which, it's not our job. We have punked out big time. We are big time punks. And yet we get up on our soapboxes and we could point at the so-called system and say how it's doing this and how it's doing that. Where is your counterpunch? Where is your plan? Where is the evidence that you're doing exactly what you say you should be doing? Where can you point to these pockets of results all across the country? Where is the matchup between what your mouth says and what your brain generates as workable ideas? We big time punks. And so we wait, as is the custom now. We become the great analysts. We have all the facts and all the figures. We're not doing a damn thing with it. All this knowledge that we have, all this expertise that we have, there is very little evidence that it has been applied anywhere to any measurable degree of success. So this is where we need to lock horns. We're not doing the work. We've just been yammering and complaining and professing to have a unique understanding of things. And there is little, if any, proof that we have even within ourselves, the faith to invest in the ideas that we generate. So it must mean that we too have given up. It must mean that we too see no way out. And we too are indulging in the same kind of shimmy sham that the Democrats are doing and the Republicans are doing. And we need to come clean about that. People talk about, well, you know, there's a Green Party and there's this party and there's that party. And I've said it over and over again. I am not excited by any party that doesn't seem to be excited about me. It's okay. If I have to come to you to find out what you can do for me, no. That the Jamaicans say, no go so. No go so. The thing is, we are not without some templates. We're not without information. We're not without answers. We're not without examples, stunning examples of analysis. We're not without the capacity to author our own changes. We're not without the capacity to organize. The most incredible organizational effort this country has ever seen. Excuse me. Marcus Garvey. Who since Marcus Garvey of Jamaica organizing internationally? Who since Garvey has done that? Who since Garvey has done that? Who has implemented the range of options that have been meticulously researched and put on paper to say, here, this is something that could work? You don't like the Garvey version? Then try the Claude Anderson version. You don't like that version? Then try this other version. Elijah Muhammad's version. You don't like that version? Then try another version. But they're all there. We're talking as if the Democratic Party is the only political organization we've ever known. We're talking as if the black churches exist only so that on a Sunday during the political season, they can defile their sanctuaries with these abominable creatures running around begging for votes. The black church was one of the most radical organizations that ever existed in this country. You talk about liberation theology, you need to see where that came from. But the leadership today has punked out. They don't want to offend anybody because they have a government contract for a daycare center and they have want some government help with such and such to line the pockets of the pastor. And they like status and symbolic nods to their importance in the community. They like these things. So they'll trade these things off for some kind of favors from the system. So you can't count on the black church as an institution anymore that defends in its traditional sense, is a competent and fearsome line of defense for all black people. You can't count on that. It's not going to happen. So, where are we? We've got to make these public acts of confession. We have to understand that we have fallen down on the job. We don't even compare, not even as a small glimmer of light compared to the incredible leadership that came before us. We are not even at that level. And what's worse is we think it's okay and it's understandable. We've rationalized our cowardice. We've made all kinds of excuses as to why we can't get things done. We've explained our dignity away. We've traded off our community for a couple of pieces of silver. Even the corpses of our children and our husbands and our sons and daughters, we trade for a couple of moments in the warm glow of the television lights. We've handed sovereignty of ourselves and our communities over to a system that gobbles it up. And that's the trade-off. We will all pretend we're doing the job. The progressive community will thump its chest about all the good things it knows, that it has a perfect handle of analysis of the complex issues assailing the globe. Where is the evidence that you have put that into practice? Where is the evidence that you are into coalition building? Where is the evidence that you are as committed to ending apartheid in America when you are practicing it yourself? The feminists are the most anti-feminist people I know. They believe white women should rule the world. Women should rule the world. Yeah, well, okay. Especially if you're white. We will tell you how to do it. Just get out of our way. When will you face the history that it was white feminists who conspired again with the same white racist system to deny all people of color their rights as citizens in this country? Deal with that. And then come see me to talk about equality, gender equality. You don't know it. You have no clue about gender equality. But you do have the racist notion, which is the operative notion in your head, that white women qualify more than any other kind of women to rule and to rule the world. See here, too. This is not a surprise to me. And I am not so excited about the whole idea. This revelation about the capacity of women to lead. I grew up with evidence of women ruling every day. They took charge. They ran things. They exhibited leadership in the way that nobody would even understand. Without declaring themselves anything. They just simply were leaders. I'm supposed to get excited that they decided to put Harriet Tubman's face on a $20 note. And along with that, the revisionist history of who she was. Somebody on television is going to tell me Harriet Tubman was an activist. Harriet Tubman was an activist. Here's a woman who was a general of an army long before anybody could even conceptualize that. Who ran things. Who went behind enemy lines. That is to say, racist, white, American, Southern, slaveholder lines. The Dixies. Went behind enemy lines more than 17 times. Rescued people. Hundreds of people. Thousands of slaves. Having to threaten to shoot some of them because they just couldn't get it in their heads that they were entitled to be free. But in 2016, as a person still in charge of my brain, as a person still with a historical memory, I am supposed to now revise my historical reference with respect to that woman. Because somebody decided, hey, guess what? This is what I can give you. Propaganda. And what I should do is now get excited about Harriet Tubman and the system's way of showing a concession that it's growing beyond its racist self. When in fact, the symbolism of it all couldn't be more stark. Harriet Tubman on one side and the Confederate president on the other side, Andrew Jackson. And it is the same state of Black America today, except we don't have the kinds of leaders of a Harriet Tubman type. We don't have that. We've got to get real, folks. And we better start having some very frank discussions that don't insult our respective intelligence or our knowledge of history. We have to start coming to terms with exactly where we are. And we have to deal with the fact that no one but us is responsible for articulating a way out. If you look to somebody to organize your future, they will happily oblige, but you shouldn't complain. We have no defenses. We have no credible defenses to speak of. We have no organization to speak of. We have no counterpunch to throw. And that is where we need to begin to begin this exploration of what's next based on where we are. Let's try that. I will be talking about ideas I think could work that have at front and center the role of individual initiative that would lend to collective action. But it starts with each individual. You've got to do something. I thank you for joining me today. I thank you for allowing me the opportunity to express myself. I really appreciate that. I want you to stay tuned. Great programming coming up next. You want to not move at all from the station. And I want you to consider supporting PRN on an ongoing basis. Spread the word, certainly, but also think of sending in a ducat or two to help us do the work that we're dedicated to doing and to take initiative and individual responsibility for a system that helps you and helps us all. I know a lot of the things I say are kind of jarring. It is not meant to offend at all. It is that we have to engage each other frankly and openly, and certainly not disrespectfully. But we have to understand that we, our positions, wherever we are on the political spectrum, our positions have integrity. And we don't have to butter it up or, you know, do anything cosmetic about it. We can express ourselves. So I thank you for allowing me the space to do that, and to trusting that, for trusting that the intent here is to cause us to think. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. Let me know what you think. And again, always a privilege and a great pleasure to be in your company. So we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.